it gonna hang in there? Dude, it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Well, Smiley, we are back with another episode as we kind of build up to the Ryder Cup. It feels like the anticipation is absolutely killing me. I don't know if it's killing you. I just want to get there to the Ryder Cup already. You are physically going to get there to Rome, but are you feeling the same way, or are you just kind of enjoying the build up a little bit to Rome?
Oh, man. I think those teams, the United States team and Team Europe, I think going to Marco Sib. Hold on. I got to say it right
because yes, we just got an email. Huge.
It's not Marco Simone. It's actually three syllables. It's Marco Simone.
Because a lot of people have been saying Marco. Marco Simone. So it's not Marco Simone.
It is Marco Simone.
This is big breaking news.
Yep. Let's see. Here we go. Okay. Here's the email. The proper pronunciation is Marco Simone. Three
this is
syllables.
Big. Is this part of like your packet you get from NBC ahead of the Ryder Cup?
No, we haven't gotten anything like that yet. Okay. I'm sitting here looking through my emails and see the Fortinet packet for this week. Okay. So that is also leaving tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. There you go. So. Yeah, but yeah, kind of back to it. I think the anticipation. It felt like this far away thing for so long, and now being seeing the teams on the grounds there last week. I thought honestly, I heard about the trips. I didn't realize that they'd have like a social team and stuff there. Just the day and age of. I thought this would be kind of a secret trip that this team was, the United States team was taken to kind of get a leg up on the European team. And then, you see a couple days later, all the social media of pretty much the trip documented, not like to a crazy extent, but just, kind of stuff you expect to see on social media today. And then Europe shows up a couple days later. So, I was thinking in my head, And this is like to put kind of what a professional golfer is thinking about in preparation for a golf course they've never seen before, especially that this event is only Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's unusual for a professional golfer to go to a different country to go play a practice round.
Yeah.
So I want you to know like that these guys that are on the United States team. They've made a commitment like to go over there to Europe, especially for the guys that are playing in Fortinet this week. And then, the following week is, I guess, would be a week off. But, Ryder Cup's right around the corner. So you got to wonder about these guys like, man, that's a lot of travel. They just finished a long year. The last thing that a lot of these guys probably wanted to do is go hop on 8 to 10 hour flights to go play a practice round when they're going to be doing it. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of Ryder Cup week. They're going to know this golf course Friday.
I heard a factoid today that I was like, that just can't be right. That was Team Europe has never done a scouting trip. This is the first scouting trip Team Europe's ever done to a venue before a match has been played. Now, of course, a lot of these venues are historic and guys have played them before in tournaments or just, through regular prep or whatever else. But I thought that I was struck by the same set of things that you were struck by, which is, first and foremost, we're living in an era where if it doesn't go on social media, it didn't happen. And I just like the matching uniforms, having a practice uniform, like where all the guys are hitting balls on the range and getting their work in, but like it has to be all uniform. That to me was interesting, funny. The same sort of deal on the Team Europe side where they had a similar level of polish and production value assigned to their scouting trip over there. But yeah, I think that it's a huge commitment for the U.S. team to go over there for the guys that are playing in the Fortinet. And for Team Europe, that whole cruise just, I guess, cruising over to Wentworth to play in the BMW championship or the BMW PGA championship, I should say, together. So it's.
Yeah, how about all 12 of them?
Isn't that amazing? Which is, and I have no idea what to think about I don't know what any of this means. Like the fact that these guys are, they're doing scouting trips for the first time, that, you know, not to say that the U.S. team hadn't scouted places before, but that was one sort of indictment of Paris, you know, was just that they weren't necessarily prepped to play the course a certain way. It's like, we're not going to make that mistake again. And then, you know, you got, you know, traveling kind of back and forth. Like, I hope it's good. I think it's good. On the Europe side, I mean, I would think that a whole crew of guys going to prep and then going to play in a tournament together and kind of hanging out and getting meals together, I think that's good. But I guess we'll find out when they all show up in a couple of weeks and tee it up in Rome. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's exciting. And we've already gotten to the phase of preparation where guys are putting some bulletin board material out there. And this is from SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. Wyndham Clark was on with Drew Stoltz and Johnson Wagner. I'm not going to quote him. I'm going to paraphrase him a little bit. So take this all with a grain of salt. But essentially, I think his gripe was that there are a lot of stats that said that Team Europe are better iron, maybe kind of mid to long iron players than Team USA. And his line of his thought was just that that's a skewed sort of number because the Team USA is actually their better wedge players. They have some of the best ball strikers in the world. And his line was like, I think we can beat them in any of those categories. Do you love this or hate this? Or how do you feel about Wyndham as a first timer on Team USA coming out and saying, yeah, I'm confident whichever format, whichever, you know, stat category, we can beat him across the board?
Yeah, no, I saw Rory say something along the lines of, you know, I think if we have, you know, better drivers of the ball, we're better with our middle irons and we're better putters. And I don't think they say like, hey, we are better. I think Rory was just referencing the overall strength of the team. And I think that was probably the comeback argument from Wyndham there. I guess that was probably talked about in the team room. I don't know when those comments came out, but obviously they probably had a glass of wine over it talking their smack. And so you bring it home with you. Now I don't mind it. I think I've told you this. I think this is going to be one of the most compelling and competitive Ryder Cups because of just how equal these teams are. And you can argue that the Europe team is stronger up top. Like it's definitely a debate, but right now what we've seen over this last year, you can't argue that Jon Rahm, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy haven't dominated the sport at one time or another over the last couple of years. So yeah, man, it's definitely, I love it. I don't know if we're going to see too much more of it in press conferences before where guys are going to be talking a little bit. I think a lot of people would really love if Brian Harman and Wyndham Clark teamed up together and they both kind of take to the microphone, just being, you know, just being talkers. Yeah. So, hey, they're just like the cornerback on a team that just has to, you know, talk.
That's right.
Talk
you got to have a few of them. And I think maybe this is also filed under the category of, because social media is just so pervasive in everything we do, that a guy comes on, says, you know, a few words, just, you know, he's being confident. Why wouldn't you be confident? You know, you're heading it. You have to be confident heading into a competition like this. And of course, they get plastered everywhere and people talk about whether or not it was a good idea to say that. But I kind of love it from Wyndham, and I love it on the same side, you know, as Rory. And I think that's a really good point of like, this is, we've talked so much about how Team Europe has slowly crept, you know, more and more back into the picture from the team that got just boat raced at Whistling Straits to a team that has some of the best players in the world and now has a surprising amount of depth. So I kind of love the stuff in the buildup. I do think it is a little bit of an interesting phenomenon of, you know, the guys who you might want to hear from or would be talking, you're probably going to hear less of that. You know, like a Scottie Scheffler basically has more or less said, like, after the way the season ended and the incessant questions that I'm sure I'd get about my putting in the lead up to this, I'm just not going to talk unless it's an obligated team sort of deal between now and when I tee it up at Marco Simone. I think Justin Thomas, you know, is an incredibly open, you know, willing to kind of share his thoughts on things, but I think for very good reason, probably doesn't want to do a lot of media in advance of this, given how much debate there's been around his captain's pick.
Yeah, there's nothing that JT can say right now.
Damn if you do, damn if he doesn't. Yeah,
and that's
his fault.
He just has to go out and just play good golf. There's nothing that you can say to defend yourself, because there's, you know, you're just gonna talk yourself into a corner.
So I mean, I think that you know, part of it is definitely interesting. I think that's a nice segue too, because we have the PGA Tour is back after a break that was maybe too short. But this is the interesting thing about this now, is because it's a different version of the fall than we've seen in past years, and probably overall a better version, because it gives guys the chance to get a little break if they'd like to take it. JT is one of the guys who's going to be in the field this weekend at the Fortinet Championship. You'll be out there in Napa calling the action on Golf Channel. So, you know, I don't know what your kind of thoughts are. You know, if we've discussed a little bit of, you know, in this kind of, as we've reacted to schedule changes, but you know, just what you're looking to see, who are you most excited to kind of see play this fall of the group that's maybe 51 and beyond, that has a chance to, like, there's stuff happening on two levels, right? There's like that pack right there at 51 through 70, let's say, who, if they have a good fall, they play their way into that next 10 category that gets them into, at least at the beginning of the year, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the Genesis Invitational. And then there's like everyone beyond that where they're playing for their two cards. So are there guys you're kind of looking out for this week at the Fortinet? You're really kind of curious to see how they play?
Yeah, I look for young guys. These, obviously, we don't have the Korn Ferry Tour players yet playing in this. That's one important note in this.
Is that
typically
it?
The Fortinet Championship has been the kickoff tournament for the PGA Tour season. Now it's still just like this carryover from the year. So it's very awkward, because Napa always used to be the start for all the fresh new faces. And so for me, when I look at this new fall season and I look at this this event out at Napa, the Fortinet, I think about young guys. I think about who's hungry, you know, like who's dying to make an impression. And to me, you know, I don't know if Minwoo's playing, but like in that same category, Akshay Bhatia is a guy that I would look out for as someone who's like, you know what, I feel like I played well enough to have been in the playoffs if the points would have gone my way, if I would have been able to accumulate points, you know, winning in Reno and having some other good starts. So guys like Akshay is definitely, he's got a point to prove, you know, that, you know, I should have been in those playoffs. I should have been able to accumulate the points. And, you know, he got a big tee time. He's paired with, I believe, Justin in the first two rounds. I need to double check that. But that's a pretty strong statement the tour set, you know, pairing Akshay in that basically 1A category as far as tee times
go. Actually a really interesting one. I'm glad you brought him up, because, you know, we pledged to be the number one podcast to provide you updates of all things Minwoo Lee, you know, cooking or otherwise.
He's probably a BMW then.
He's playing BMW. So I if you recall that conversation, the only fall event he's playing on the PGA Tour is going to be the Zozo, because he said, hey, I wanted to get back to Australia. I wanted to kind of shape my schedule around that. And basically,
he
had two paths, right? He was, through special temporary members status, he was 100. He had the equivalent of 107th place on the FedEx Cup point standings. And so if you have the same amount of points as 125 or better at the end of the fall season, you would earn your tour card that way. So he could have gone out and played a bunch of PGA Tour events in the fall and just locked that up and good to go. The other route that you can take is finishing top 10 on the DP World Tour Race to Dubai for players that are not otherwise qualified, right? So Rory and Rahm sit at the top of that list. He is fifth on that list, which makes him de facto third of the guys who could earn their tour card through that path.
Is he settled in there? And like, how volatile are their rankings at the end of the year?
Well, the hilarious thing is at the top, I think Rory's played like 8 events that count towards the Race to Dubai, and he has like almost 5,000 points. And Rahm's played 5 events, and he has like 2,600 points. So what Rory's doing is absolutely absurd in that standpoint. But then at 3, 4, 5, I think all those guys have around 1,900, 1,800 points. Like, Minwoo could easily get in that mix. And so the interesting thing about that is that if you finish first, like if you finished effectively third, but first of guys who don't already have their tour status, you lock up full PGA Tour status for the next season, right?
Say it again. So if you finish first, like in that category for guys that aren't already exempt on the PGA Tour?
Just to simplify it, we should just throw out Rory and Rahm. So just pretend they don't exist, and so pretend he's third on that list. So he'd be third on that list then. So if he finishes first on that list, he earns full PGA Tour status for the 2024 season.
Who's in front of him?
Adrian Meronk and Victor Perez. And again,
Adrian Meronk, the guy that was left at the altar.
The European Keegan. So you wonder what kind of motivation he has. I think that, but here's the thing though, is that if he doesn't finish first, you get your tour card, but you're subject to all these different reshuffles, which I'm not sure you're subject to those same reshuffles if you would have played the PGA Tour fall and tried to kind of earn your way in. With top 125 or better status, you know, via the special temporary membership that he earned. It's all very convoluted, but it is a little bit intriguing that Minwoo decided to take the DP World Tour route and take a little bit of a gamble that he could finish at the top of that list instead of going out and beating fields he could definitely beat on the PGA Tour fall schedule and just locking up his card that way. You find that interesting at all?
Well, he'll get guaranteed points and money at Zozo. Yeah. I don't think that's a cut event. So definitely has that in his favor if he plays well, that he knows he's not going to move back that week.
Yeah, well, exactly. And he may very well. That's the thing, too, is that if you finish top 125, you do not count against those 10 tour cards coming from the race to Dubai. So he might get it both ways and be fine. But it's an interesting decision. And, of course, it's one we must discuss because we are your number one Minwoo Lee fan update news podcast, so yeah. We have to do justice there.
Get back to Fournette though, the field is not strong, and I don't know if that's how it's going to be the rest of the fall. And you know, it's really not strong. I was sitting there looking at the field list and I was thinking in my head, I was like, I wonder where I would be like slated in. I'm not far off from getting into the Fournette. I'm going to tell you that right now. It wasn't that far away. Could have been pretty close. I have no intentions of playing right now, so just for all the guys out there cheering for the comeback.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know where my golf clubs are right now. I went to the golf course the other day with my clubs, and I shot, like, I had to shoot some content stuff, and I had ran out of time that didn't even get to hit a golf ball, so it's a different world right now with me and the golf clubs.
I've probably played maybe two times as much golf as you this summer.
Two times.
More than that?
100% it's more than that. It's like four times more. And like you've hit like of the top 100 golf courses, you've hit 10 of them. So you've had one for the record books. It's been a heck
of a
season.
It's been
a
good one. I had to get it all in before, you know, got a big spinal surgery coming up in October that I'm not looking forward to. And my sincere hope for all of you listening or watching is that I get to pop up on this podcast in about a month and a half wearing a giant donut around my neck and you can laugh at me because that would just be, it'll be a tough scene, but I'm just leaning into it at this point. But yeah, I mean, despite the amount of golf I'm playing, golf of good courses, but bad golf, I'm nowhere near the Fournette Championship field as you are. And I am okay with that. Like, I'm okay with that. I think it's like you can't really, as we're talking about all this new version of the PGA Tour and, you know, what changes we're trying to make to appease the top players and you know, with those, the knock-on effects of those changes, who are we forcing out, you know, and who are we kind of taking away opportunities from? Like, this is set up to give opportunities to that group that is maybe going to feel a little slighted when the full calendar year rolls around next year and they can't get into the signature events. And so it's like, here's your chance to earn some money.
I mean, look at the Korn Ferry guys. Yeah. If you're Ben Coles right now on the Korn Ferry tour, you're like, dude, get me off of this tour. I have proven a point that I should be in Napa. And that to me is where the tour's missed the mark on this, is like these guys that have, you know, whoever's in the field, the back half of this field, they shouldn't be in this field. It should be substituted with 30 of the Korn Ferry guys. Like, there's no world where the Korn Ferry guys their playoffs shouldn't be over by now.
Yeah.
They have to end when the Tour Championship ends. I just don't understand why the Korn Ferry Tour goes through a week after the Ryder Cup. It just makes zero sense to me. I know the new deal is that it's going to be a calendar year, but still, it's these guys. All right, correct me if I'm wrong. The guys in the fall don't earn FedEx Cup points. They do because it's their season, but it's not, they're not accumulating FedEx Cup points for next season. So in my head, it's like, who cares if they, like, if these top 30 guys go, it just doesn't make any sense to me why it's a full year for these guys. It just doesn't make sense that the 51st guy on the FedEx Cup needs to go play golf. To me, like, they earn their spot.
Well, 51 through 70 have their status locked up. I think they literally do. I think that, like, they don't. Yeah.
Like, you made the playoffs, so you have status. But you know what I'm saying? It's like,
right.
To me, it's just the
scheduling's odd. And I wonder if that's something that they'll clean up in future years, where they'll try to align those to give everyone a chance to kind of get in that next category. And you're still doing, you know, the top players a favor by giving them the FedEx Cup point head start so they can play into those next 10 swing five categories for the next season. But at the same time, letting those Korn Ferry Tour guys get in and at least have a chance to play their way, you know, kind of into some of those categories. But I think...
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't. Like, just hear me out. So, like, the Tour Championship just ended. Like, it just ended. The season's over. So why is the 200th guy on the FedEx Cup have an opportunity to still, like, somehow jump back in to good status from the year? Like, they lost. Like, they missed the mark is what I'm getting at. The old system to me made much more sense because it was so cut and dry on the numbers. And now a guy who didn't have a good season at all gets into this event, which he never would ever get into, is now getting another opportunity for, like, a second chance. I liked the old system, and it's like, hey, go play in the Korn Ferry Tour Championship with all, you know, with the Korn Ferry guys who didn't get their card, or see, it's like 26 to 75. Those guys, and then 126 to 200. It just made sense. Put everybody in there, make it a playoffs. I don't know why we got away from that system, because to me, that was the way to get back. You know, this just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because, you know, all right, so walk me through this. So a guy who's 200th in the FedEx Cup goes and wins the Fournette this week. So I don't know who that name would be. Let's say they go win in Napa this week. So that obviously earns them status, but let's say they finish second. Okay, they earned 300 FedEx Cup points. Now, where exactly would that jump a guy who had 50? So he has like 350 points. So now he's somewhere around 125 in the FedEx Cup. So is this guy, when he finishes, at, let's say now he was at 200, now he's at 125 come the RSM, where exactly is he? Like, where does he sit? Does he have status? Is he just in the top 10 thing? Where is
top
that player
125 will earn status. And here, to use your exact example, William McGirt is 200th on the list with 86 points. If he earns 300 points for a win at the Fortnite, I don't even know if he's in the field, but let's just say he's in the field, right? Then that would get him to 386, which would have him at 114th on the list just before Taylor Pendrith, right? So that would earn him, if he stayed in that top 125, then he's got his tour card locked up for the next season. So it just doesn't make sense.
Like, the season already happened.
This is definitely one that they're going to have to iron out. I think what is happening here is, and I'm not trying to be like a tour apologist here, but it's like, what has happened here is there were outside unnatural forces, whether you want to attribute that to live or the PIF or more money or, you know, just general player, top star player resentment building over the years and saying, you guys need to do more for us. And that comes to a head. And then you have to make a bunch of changes that are probably not as planned out or well thought out as maybe you would have liked them to be. I mean, look at like the way the schedule rollout went and, you know, how last year it's like, okay, they're elevated events. Wait, no, don't call them that. We're going to call them the designated events now. And it's like, oh, no, now they're actually the signature events. It's like the rollout on this has not really been as clean as probably you'd want it to be if you're a major pro sports league.
You think? I'm sitting here reading through all my material being the analyst in the booth this week, and I'm thinking to my head, like, man, this is there's just so much going on that I'm going to have to recalibrate. And then on top of that, they rerouted the golf course at Fortinet. So there's going to be times where I'm like, here at the 12th hole, I'm like, that's not number 12. Like, this is a new 12. So I'm going to have to get used to that next week. That's going to be a big
thing that we talk about, just how that the golf course is going
to
play.
I just think when it comes down to it, it's like it's gonna take some time to figure out. And I think like the issue they have now is like you had a lot of mouths at the top of the heap that want to get fed, and you fed them the majority of what you had. And now you don't have as much food to kind of go around for the lesser mouse. And it's like, how are we going to work this out so that you are giving the Corn Ferry Tour guys a fair shake? Or, I mean, even like this whole...
It's the Corn Ferry guys that
the DP
really
World Tour
this.
10 cards, they come in ahead of the Corn Ferry Tour cards. Is that fair? I'm not sure that it is.
No, that's... All right, so the big losers in this right now are the Corn Ferry Tour guys. They should be in Napa. And I didn't even know what you just said there about the top 10 from the DP World Tour being in front of your Corn Ferry guys. Like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense at all to me. So, man, it just is. I can understand why now when you look at where the FedEx Cup playoffs end and where how many cards, you know, 50, you know, inside of 50, you're good. You know, 50 to 70, you have status, but you can shuffle around. I can see why it's so tight now, because you have the DP World Tour bringing in 10. You got, you know, instead of 25, you got 30 Corn Ferry Tour players. But, man, it's going to be, you know, I think we have to let it play out. But in my head, I'm thinking to myself, like, a guy who had a really not a great year can pass up a guy who, let's say, somebody that was around 115th in the FedEx Cup. Typically on a year, you know, whoever the player would be, that's not a bad year. It's not a bad year. It's overall, that has always been the goal. If you're inside the top 125, then it was deemed a successful season, because guess what? You took a job from somebody else away. Like, this is my job. And I don't really like the idea of like the season ended at the Tour Championship, but wait, no, you could still take my job away from me. So I don't really necessarily love this fall.
We are going to have at least one, maybe a few examples at the end of the fall. We're going to be like, that guy got screwed. That guy got screwed. That guy got screwed. And it's going to be something to talk about. And it'll be interesting. And the hope is that the tour like looks at that and is like, okay, look, I get it. It's a whole other set of changes, but we got to get this thing right so that we're giving the guys who deserve opportunities.
Well, I think we all like the idea of the top 10.
The next 10 with Swing 5. And then also, depending on how they use those four sponsor exemptions, like, in theory, it could work pretty well. But it's like, let's see it in practice.
Well, that all sounds great to me if the Corn Ferry Tour guys were there. You know, like, that would be really cool to see somebody, like, there's so many very compelling names on the Corn Ferry Tour that are going to get cards this year. And I would love to see them get off to hot starts and be able to play their way into some of those early season events. And now they're not going to have any opportunity to get into those big events early, theoretically,
right? That's what the Swing Five should be for. They should be able to get into some of those early season events that aren't.
What's Swing Five?
Are like just like we're not taking, like, so next 10 is all based on it, like rolling FedEx
How
Cup
play.
Points list, right? So like it's like,
yes. Which is starts at scratch at
next 10 is basically this. It's like,
why is it so complicated? We've talked about this so many times.
Next 10 is basically this. It's like,
is it 51 to 60 right now?
Yeah, exactly. Next 10 right now is if you're like, hey, guess what? We're not playing the FedEx Cup fall at all. We're just fast forwarding to Century Field's already set. We're like, we're fast forwarding to the next year and 2024 started. And who are we going to take to play in the AT&T Pro-Am and the Genesis? It would be 51 through 60. So this FedEx Cup fall really extended all the way back into the whole season. That points list, the top 10 on that points list that are not otherwise qualified through finishing top 50, you know, in the previous year, or tournament winner, or any of those other categories, those 10 will enter the field. Now, the Swing Five is only based on how you played in the little stretch run of non-signature events.
And that starts when?
So that will start No. That will not. That starts next year. So like before, like I'm not going to get the exact tournaments right. But it's like, so what's nobody, like to get into really the AT&T or the Genesis. It's like it's going to depend on how you play it. Like the Sony or like the Amex or whatever events happen before then. It's just who played well, who finished the top five in FedEx Cup points for those events. So theoretically, Korn Ferry Tour guys, you know, guys who just earned their cards should be able to, if you play well. And you are already in through any of the other elder categories, you can get in that way. And I guess my thought on that is like, okay, good. Like five spots are good. But you know what I'd really love to see is with those four sponsor exemptions, I know there are going to be some big names that have missed out that people are going to be tempted.
Yeah,
but like, please use those on some of those other young guys and Korn Ferry Tour guys and give them a shot to like to make it. Like if they're number six on that list, or better yet, if you're 11th on the next 10 list, like let's get those guys in because they deserve it. And you know, and they're the guys who should be getting playing opportunities. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, if you're sitting here listening and you're like, man, how does Smiley not have any, like, why does he not understand this concept? It doesn't, I think it's so confusing because my brain is so wired for our fall that we've always had. And just our playoff system, and it was so easy to figure out, and it wasn't confusing. And now, like the next 10 thing in my head, the next 10 represented, you know, this whole fall series, like the 10 best guys who played the best would be at the top of those rankings heading in to the early calendar year. To me, that makes sense because, like, what else is this fall for? It's mind-numbing.
I've read the PGA Tour article that announced the 2024 schedule with all the next 10, you know, or swing five. I've probably read that 35 times and I'm still trying to wrap my head around it.
Is there an audiobook version of that? Like, ooh. Apparently, because when I read it, I just don't.
Maybe that's what we need to get into on the Smiley Show is some audio. We can just take the PGA Tour news releases and we can do like some ASMR readings of them to make it easily digestible.
Just doesn't make any sense.
Well, that was a tangent I didn't expect right, to
so
take.
Let me ask you one question too. So is 125 still the number come the end of this? Like RSM, is it still 125?
Yes.
Okay, so a guy who is, for instance, 125 right now, and he finished, or let's say whoever finishes 126, it's still going to have that same 126 to 150 category, and the same 150 to 200. Actually, I don't know if there is a 150 to 200 category. I think that's missed card, but so that's
correct.
The way.
Yes.
Like, that's,
yes. Although even within that, it's like there's like a. There's like a bonus sort of category where it's like it's and this is bringing in your favorite category of all, special temporary membership. Like if you earn same amount of points as 125 or better, you get a card, but it's not like you bump out 125. There's just like a bonus card.
That's always been a thing. That was like the, you know, Will Zalatoris, right. You know, like didn't make the playoffs. Same with Akshay.
I like this audiobook idea. There's something there. I'm gonna just kind of ideate on that a little bit. Come back with a half baked idea. We got a really, really good interview with Brett McCabe to get to that is focused on like just the psychology of playing in big events, specifically the Ryder Cup coming up. There are three different players that Brett works with, Sam Burns, John Rahm, and Brian Harman, who are going to be playing in this Ryder Cup. So I'm really excited to get to that. I just want to just have one kind of finishing question for you before we get to Brett, which is Fortinet this weekend. JT, this kind of leads us into the Ryder Cup discussion. What are you looking to see, or what would you like to see from JT this weekend in Napa to really kind of make you feel like this is he's ready to go for Rome?
I think just running through his processes just looks. I think one of the things that I felt like towards the end of the year just looked like he was, you know, definitely trying hard, but definitely like not comfortable in his routines, and you could just tell he was thinking a lot. I would be, you know, thrilled to watch him. You know, just, you know, I would be fine with him hitting bad shots, but like know exactly what to work on. Like I just to visually see him not feel like he's searching and knowing, like, I think a good formula for him would be to have offense. So even if he's got a little, you know, some, you know, three or four bogeys around, but go make 7-8 birdies, I think that would be a better formula than trying to play too perfect and trying to prove, like, you know, I can play, you know, this perfect style golf that I've played in the past. And I think when you listen to this Brett McCabe interview, you'll definitely know that. I think that's the rut that a lot of players get into, is they try to play too perfect and they don't remember when they're playing well that they hit bad shots too. They just couldn't quite let it go. So I think that's something I believe this week, if JT can just go out and go try to make a bunch of birdies and have fun, I think, and just forget about like his, like having the perfect form heading into the Ryder Cup, I think that would be a good goal for JT, and I'll definitely be looking out for that.
Yeah, without a doubt. So there you have it. That's kind of our our Fortinet preview and an extended ramble on the reformatted FedEx Cup Fall. Let's get to that Brett McCabe interview. Right. Oh, well, let's almost get to the Brett McCabe interview. Smiley, you have one more thing to say?
I have one more thought that we didn't get into, and it was about the BMW Championship.
Oh, yeah,
we talked about all 12 of the guys that are playing, and I just wanted to make a note that all 12 guys are paired together in threesomes. And I think that's something that we could take a peek at real quick, is like, are these pairings guys that we might see together at the Ryder Cup? Because
let's
sitting here looking at
this. I was not even aware of this until you said it. This is fantastic. What do you got for me?
No, this is definitely something we need to get into. And right now I'm seeing Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, and Åberg. So Ludvig Åberg, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy. So we talked about Åberg and Rory potentially.
Or what about
together.
Åberg and Vic?
And
that could be interesting.
That's, you know, that's definitely definitely an option. The next one, Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, and Sepp Straka. So if Sepp Straka and Shane Lowry play together and don't lose a match, they're going to be folk heroes in Rome.
Wow.
I feel like those two together.
That was a Husky
we
boys.
Didn't even think
exactly.
About that
was a Husky boys combo I completely missed out on. I was so focused on Sepp and Rom, I forgot that Sepp and Lowry is even better.
It's a better combo.
That's amazing.
Hey, and two, Shane and Sepp both play the same golf ball, so don't look
boys.
Past that might
little
be an
Z-stars.
Option.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, so keep working down the list. I got John Rahm, Højgaard, and Tyrrell Hatton. So Hatton and Rahm would be a nasty pairing together. I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't watched Højgaard play a ton of golf, so looking forward to watching him play. I've heard it's like Steve Stricker with power, so I'm looking forward to seeing.
I could be wrong. I think he's a jailbird guy. Either that or he's got like kind of like a saber tooth that looks similar to it. I gotta stick with my jailbird guys. So no, I think, and it's interesting there, like I definitely Rahm Hatton, but like that we're also looking to like Rahm and Rory, maybe even Vic to a certain, you know, extent, who's going to take the younger guys under their wing. So I wonder if that's what's happening there with Rahm and Højgaard. Like there's look at the analytics and they said this could be a good pairing to kind of get Nikolaj some experience with Rahm.
If Hatton and Rahm play together, I'm telling you what, they are both very angry when they play golf.
Volcano boys.
You know, we have to cut so many mics of audio from both of those two guys. And if they play together, it would just be just so many emotions. And I would actually love to watch those two play together because they're such good competitors, but they're also two of my favorite putters that I think kind of mirror their tempos and their strokes mirror each other. When you go watch their putting strokes, it's the same. It's the exact same cadence in their backstroke and through stroke. I think they would be great together, and I'll get to the last group so we can kind of get through it. Justin Rose, Bobby Mack, otherwise known as Scotland's Robert McIntyre, and the Englishman Matthew Fitzpatrick. So maybe Justin Rose and Matthew Fitzpatrick would be the all English pairing. And you know, Bobby Mack's never played a Ryder Cup. It'd be interesting to see how much he plays and who he plays with. He, to me, seems kind of like the oddball of this whole group. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised if he only played like two matches, and not, that's not because of his play. I just see that maybe like he might be the oddball out. Like if there's another guy that they're like, hey, we're going to send out this hot pairing this afternoon, we're going to send Bobby Mack for both matches. So, that wouldn't surprise me at all, but he's a hell of a player too, and probably would pair well with
let's see, Rose or Fitzpatrick. I don't know how well we play with them.
I think that that's probably a fair observation. Despite qualifying through the European points list, I think he's definitely the guy that probably will sit the most, you'd imagine. I think that in that group, you know, if we're talking about Rahm and Rosie.
Even Rosie,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, well, yeah, so we're talking about Rahm and Hatton being really fiery guys that – you know, Fitzpatrick and Rose seem to have more of that sort of even keel demeanor and could really kind of, you know, I think the thing that people look at a lot with this type of stuff is like, oh, we need to kind of do an opposites thing. But, you know, in reality, it's like maybe having a guy that is a similar demeanor to you kind of keeps you on that same level throughout the match. And I know Bobby Mack, especially in that Scottish Open where he nearly, you know, beat Rory, had a little bit of fire there on the back nine, making putts, making a charge on Sunday. But in general, seems to be more of like an even keel type guy. So maybe that's what's happening there with those three guys of just, you know, kind of guys that can play a real balanced, calm role as partners.
Yeah. And, you know, I felt like it was important for us to we mentioned that Team Europe was over at BMW, but I'm sitting here kind of flipping through it and see that all 12 guys are paired together. You know, there's the only guys that are playing at Fortinet. Well, first off, I think it's interesting that Zach Johnson's playing in Napa, and same with Stuart Sink. He's a vice captain, but maybe it's just good for him to take his mind off of just the Ryder Cup in general and just go play golf and get away from it. Because I definitely want to talk to Zach I would love to have him on, but the one question I want to ask of him is just how difficult is it to be a captain? Because you have to, it's 2 years of prep and it feels like it never gets here. We were just talking about it earlier. It's like, I think the Ryder Cup just feels so far away, but it's interesting that he's playing and the fact that, you know, Max and JT are both playing at Fortinet. It's typical for the PGA Tour to split up their star. Like if there's only two big stars, which for this week, it's Max and JT, they're going to put them in opposite waves. They do that for TV, but it would have been nice to see like maybe four players that we could have had a couple Ryder Cup pairings similar to this, but good for Europe, man. That's definitely doesn't hurt things to see all those guys playing together. I think that helps the guys, especially if you're looking for a guy, it's like, all right, this is what if you've never played with a guy much, you know what I mean? It's you're now watching him in competition. You can see what he's doing well, what he's not doing well. And maybe you kind of know, it's like, hey, this is when I need to be aggressive because I watched him at the BMW and this wasn't a shot he liked, or this is a shot that I know he can pull off. So I think I think this is a big deal too. That all these guys
Luke
are playing
Donald
together
in a threesome with the Molinari brothers, you know, and yeah, I mean, well,
of course,
just,
I didn't know Eduardo still played.
He's been playing. I think maybe it's just this season where he's popped back up on my radar, but several DP World Tour tournaments. So
he still does all the statistics stuff for everybody. And
yeah,
it's still
interesting.
I
don't know why. Sometimes my brain has trouble wrapping around, you know, the fact that
people can do two things.
It's pretty interesting. But yeah, and on the American side, I think to your point, it's like, okay, if you want to split up Homa and JT, that's totally fine. But like, maybe you could have thrown Zach Johnson in one of those groups just to hang out. Or I don't know if that's too much pressure, but like he's in a pair with KH Lee and Andrew Putnam.
If they would have put Zach and JT together in a group, that would have been like, I would have, regardless of anything have said on the broadcast, I feel like nothing I could have said was right because everybody just wanted me to probably criticize the picks. They were like, you know, why did Zach pick JT? And now he's talking about all their good golf shots when they're not good golf shots. And it's like, oh God, this is a broadcaster's
Zach's
nightmare.
Like walking around, like helping JT line up his putts, like really trying to make sure you.
Oh gosh.
No,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's a really, really good observation on your side. And I think that, that can only help. I mean, it's like these guys are all, because, you know, you could go from a very cohesive team exercise, you know, at Marco Simone and then get split up into a bunch of different configurations. And now we're all competing against each other again, you know, try to win a tournament. Not to say that they aren't going to try to beat each other, but going and being in these little kind of pods, three-man pods the whole week, you know, kind of gives you something where it's like, yeah, we're still teammates. We're still bonding. We're you know, hanging out ahead of the Ryder Cup. I think it can only help. So,
dude, all right. So okay. One last question. How many of those players of the 12 Ryder Cup European players, how many of those guys finished in the top 10?
Oh, that is...
Can you imagine if they have like eight?
I was
going
to
say,
I was like,
ten.
I'm trying to think what the over under is that you'd set. Like, I would say,
it's like a really good football team that you know you're about to play. It goes out and wins like by like five or six touchdowns against a good team, and you're like, man, we got to go play against that. It's like if they have eight guys finishing the top ten or something like that. That I think how this group plays at the BMW is going to be a big storyline.
Right.
Like going into it's like the recency bias thing. We're going to talk about how the form is of these guys, and it's going to be their last event.
I'd set that over under at 5.5, and I think
you said 5.5.
I said 5.5, and I think it's either 4.5 or 5.5. I think good vibes.
I think
you think you said 4.5, and you're taking unders or over.
That's just math. You know, like I'm taking 4.5 just, I'm going to take the over. I got it right at five.
I was going to set it at five and a half and take the under because I thought five. So we're arriving at the same place. I think five feels like a good number.
Okay.
Yeah. We're just different odds makers. I'm a much more generous book. So,
but let's say they have eight or nine finishing the top 10 or God willing, all 10 finishing the top 10 or 10 of the 12 finish the top 10. Or what if they have, I don't know if there's a cut at the BMW. Let's say like eight of them miss the cut. I think that's like, that also is a storyline too. So we're looking at it on this side, but let's look on the other side.
They should just play like a, I don't know how you term it because it's a threesome, but like they should just play all shot and just get DQ'd. But like, hey, we're just working out the kinks of all shot here. We don't care. We finish the tournament. We're just here to get a little reps in. So, all right. So that was a good one there to kind of get in the notes. But yeah, as previously mentioned, we now have Brett McCabe, really, really interesting conversation about just the psychology of, you know, competing at these highest levels. So let's get to that conversation right now. Smiley talking to Dr. Brett McCabe.
Happy to be joined by Dr. Brett McCabe. He is one of my closer friends, LSU grad, just like myself, someone I've definitely leaned on in my professional journey. Doc, we got the Ryder Cup coming up. I mean, just overall, man, like we constantly are talking about how big of an event the Ryder Cup is, especially to these players. What exactly do you feel like these players are going through in their prep, as well as like just when they get out there, how nervous these guys are going to be?
I don't know what it'd be like to walk into that amphitheater. Last year, I was fortunate enough to watch Billy and Sam as they were leading into the President's Cup and walked in and felt that. And then I could turn around and go back and watch. But I was able to walk in that moment and it was just awesome, right? I look at the Ryder Cup and there's just nothing I don't think that compares to that level of adrenaline rush that comes of wearing the red, white, and blue in that environment on foreign soil. Like, I think playing at home is awesome, but playing in foreign soil where you're the enemy, there's nothing you can do to prepare for that adrenaline boost. I don't know, maybe it'd be the equivalent of like you and I running out of the tunnel in Tiger Stadium at 7 p.m. on a Saturday night with the sun setting in the western sky. That's about the only thing that I think could equate to that.
So, I mean, there's a difference too, you know, when guys play in front of a home crowd versus playing in front of an away crowd. Do you see just a general advantage just from a mental profile between certain players who thrive in those big type of situations on the road and feeding off of the negative crowd versus the other way?
It's always easier to play the hated. It's always easier to play the underdog or the heel, right? And I think, you know, we've watched Michael Jordan do that for years of finding a way to create a slight in his game. It's easy to be booed and rally. Like, I used to love to pitch away games because they would play the hype music and they were just trying to, you know, beat you down. And it was nothing better. It's hard to play at home. And sometimes you see teams, even with the home field advantage in football or baseball or basketball, sometimes they struggle there because they want to perform at a level and the expectation is as a home crowd. What makes to me the Europeans tough is there's nobody from Italy. And they have an assistant captain. So it's an away game for them, but with a bunch of people cheering them on. So, you know, you have Victor coming from his places in Norway and John from Spain and all this other stuff. And you're like, and they're in Italy, right? So while they have the home support, they don't have the home pressure. When you play in the United States, there's home pressure. I think going on the road, you can bond together, eliminate distractions a little bit, and kind of go on a business trip of we're going to pillage the village a little bit. We're going to go and take care of our business. We're going to burn this place down when we leave. And there's nothing wrong with that attitude. It really helps players in a framework of being in a little bit more of a competitive environment to kind of have a clear objective when it's we want to be the spoiler.
And that makes so much sense. And I think throughout this entire year, we've been, you know, kind of leading up towards this Ryder Cup, and we just kind of touched on what it takes as far as the mental profile to be successful over there. But two in major championships, you know, throughout the year, these guys, this is what they gear up for, is the major championships. And, you know, you're in a position where you get to talk to many of the top players in the world and trying to get their mental game ready for the majors, having them peak at the right time. What do you tell a player, or what do you tell a player going into a major or the Ryder Cup to literally just try to get them in a state of mind to really not get in their own way?
Well, first thing we're going to do is we're going to simplify everything that we do. You know, as a player, there were times that you escalated and your arousal, your adrenaline, your anxiety peaked. I would assume Augusta or places like that where you were, I mean, how do you ever you don't replicate that feeling and you don't prepare for it, what you feel, right? But what happens is the mind starts trying to prevent mistakes from happening. So the uncertainty of competition makes you start thinking about all the negatives that can happen. And what happens is we pull from the past and we try to predict the future. And so what we do is we overcomplicate it. We start trying to do way too many things. What I try to get a player to do before they go into any kind of sporting event that's a big event, and golf is, for instance, is how do we simplify it into the three things that we can do? Let's have kind of a mental cue about being aware of where we are and making sure that our intention of a shot we're going to hit will never be sacrificed. Let's have a physical anchor that brings us back in the present moment. And it may be the caddy with a comment. It may be the use of the towel. It may be something in the moment that allow our feet to be grounded where we are. And then let's make an aggressive action kind of statement of like, let's hit some golf shots. I think the biggest misnomer in big events and majors is that people try to play away from making mistakes. Mm. And what I've seen over the last 5 to 10 years in golf is majors, Ryder Cups, it's about execution. It's not about prevention. And so the mind tries to prevent. So I want players to execute. And so we know that we're going to have to clean up small things. But usually the details, the small details, is what is at risk in these types of events. But it's why you see in match play in these types of events, guys make bombs. Mm. They make 30 and 40 footers because they're not worried about the 3 or 4 footer coming back. Okay. And everything is on pure go, pure play great. And the truth of the matter is you can kind of mitigate some bad play in match play by just hanging around until you find it. Whereas in a stroke play event, you could be sitting there and being like, oh my God, I'm falling behind. You're not falling behind. You're staying around long enough to be able to put in the knockout blow.
So we had Jordan Spieth early on this year, and we talked a little bit about Scottie Scheffler. Both of those guys got to play at a young age in the Ryder Cup, one being at Whistling Straits with Scottie, and then Jordan Spieth at the Memorial at the President's Cup. And from what you've seen, how does it change a player when they get to play in an environment like that and have success? Do you see their psyches change just from a confidence standpoint, or is it something that just takes over where they know, hey, I can do this not only in this big environment, why can't I do this at major championships?
Well, I had a person I was watching one time speak. I was talking to him as an astronaut. He goes, once you've been to space, everything else seems easy. Okay. And I think that's a great way to look at the Ryder Cup, right? Is once you've been to space and you've had that surge of adrenaline, then it's like, wait a minute, everything else doesn't quite rise up to that level. And then once you get to do it again and again and again, the anxiety's there, but it's never that high. I think what happens is we expect a player to do well at a Ryder Cup, or they do it at a Ryder Cup, and then they expect to replicate that at a major. The problem is that their team is not all hanging out in the locker room. They don't have 11 other guys or women at the Solheim Cup cheering them on. They're out there trying to compete, and it's over 4 days of 72 holes of managing distractions and drama. The Ryder Cup or President's Cup is over a few days of managing distractions and drama, but it's a collaborative event. You have the coaches wearing the same outfits. You have the players. It's the most team feel that they have. It's no different than when I played in a, you know, I had an outfielder that took care of business. I had we all would pull together. And there's the great scene in the last Ryder Cup of JT and Daniel Berger standing out there and shotgunning beers on the first tee. You don't see that at Augusta National, right?
No, you don't
see that at a US Open. People go home, they get away, and they try to decompress, but there they embrace it, right? They're just a part of it. And now they're going to go out and root for somebody else and just pour that positive energy into somebody. So that's the hard thing. But the quality of play it takes to play well at a Ryder Cup, to earn to be a top 12 member of that Ryder Cup, it does raise expectations in majors. But what you have to do is temper it and say, now listen, what did we do in the Ryder Cup that helped in match plays? We simplified what we were doing. We didn't feel like we had to be special. We didn't feel like we had to be Superman. We felt like all we had to do was execute our game and put ourselves in position to win. It's like a good friend of ours at the US Amateur, Nick Dunlap. He didn't have to do anything special to win. He took that to Walker Cup. He didn't play his best and still got a very pivotal half in the singles match. So you look at that as like learning how to navigate is the critical factor of what these events are. I think a lot of times we all dream about being special in those moments. Don't have to be special. You just have to be your average.
And when you and I worked together, one of the main things that you kept trying to drill into me is that you can't skip steps. And what I mean by that is I was struggling and was at the bottom of the ladder. Like, you couldn't have gone further back and down from where I wanted to be. And for someone like Jordan Spieth or Ricky Fowler, and even a little bit of Justin Thomas right now, what's the biggest thing that you see, not only just those guys, but how someone cannot be at their best, but figure out, how do I get back to where I was?
It's a great question, and it's a mystery, right? I mean, I had that happen to me when I was playing at LSU. I was on top of my world, and it collapsed in one night of an injury, and it took me 14 months to find something. And there were a lot of really lonely nights of watching my teammates succeed. When we lose our game, what happens is we try to recreate what we had. We try to go back to this time, and we tend to have this very selective memory. It's almost like looking back at a past vacation and thinking it was the greatest vacation of our life. But you forget the fact that you missed a flight, the rental car was late, you got food poisoning at one place, and you just glorify it, right? And you've seen that it was so much easier. What you have to do is get people to say, listen, it's like climbing a mountain. The beginning of the mountain is as important as the top of the mountain, but the top of the mountain is more treacherous because you have more to lose up there. So we've got to win the bottom first, and we got to start stack it. And so what that means is we surge, we struggle, we regress. We surge, we struggle, and sometimes we regress all the way back down, but we have to keep going. And when somebody like, you know, what Ricky did this year, which was so wonderful to see, and Jordan has done it, and I have no doubt in my mind JT will do it, is that it's one of those things that sometimes when the game is punishing you, you don't get away with the little things that you used to get away with. You used to miss a fairway and get it up and down, and it was a terrible shot, but now that terrible shot has trauma associated with it. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, there it is. See, that's why I keep struggling. Versus when you're really playing good, you miss it and you're like, man, that's a bad bogey. That's a dumb bogey. But I got five more birdie opportunities coming. When you're struggling, it's like, I've made that swing four times today. You're not thinking about the birdie opportunities. You're thinking about the mistakes that you made and you've been compounding it. And the mind is so powerful like that. The best way to describe it to somebody listening to this, have you ever been in a car accident, let's say in an intersection, and you drive up in that intersection, and the next time you drive up to that intersection, an intersection you may have been through 10,000 times in your life, now that intersection has a memory associated with it. And you're going to get tenser and tenser the closer you get to it until you've done it another 10,000 times. But every once in a while, that brain fart pops through and it's like, God, you remember that time you got in that car accident here? Okay, that's what happens. I don't know about you. I don't eat food that I've gotten food poisoning from. I smell it. I have the same reaction. Some people say that with tequila. But, you know, it's this thing that people have to realize is that the only way over something that's hard is putting positive trials through it. And we have to put 10, 20, 30 to 1 for every bad one. We have to have good ones.
And just when guys kind of get into a mental rut, what is the main cause, you think? I always kind of felt like it was the physical change that you tried to make that eventually led to the mental issues. Do you agree with that?
It could be. I mean, I think sometimes, and this wasn't your case, but I think sometimes players get in a mental rut because they stop doing the little things that made them successful. Mm. life changes. They don't go to a tournament and find a way to the top. Now they're measuring themselves against what that standard should be.
Right.
Like, I've had a player say, well, this XYZ type of player wouldn't make that mistake. I'm like, I've never seen that in the performance book on tour. I think sometimes it's a physical change, that something seems so easy and now it seems so foreign.
Mm.
I think we lose confidence. I think sometimes, there is a luck associated with it. There's a randomness of the game that sometimes things go people's way. And you know what? Sometimes they don't. And when they don't, if we make it personal, then we start carrying it forward. People who have an ability to, in competition, people who have an ability, now people are going to question this. People in competition, when they make a mistake, the best have a very interesting way of being like, that's really not my fault. And we see that sometimes and think, well, they're transferring blame. But in the heat of the moment, it's like, that ball didn't go the way it was supposed to. That ball hit something. The wind took it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, when they go practice, they take full responsibility. Okay. A lot of times what happens is we carry our own burdens. And the players who have an ability to see an external factor causing their struggle, they tend to, the reason is on that next shot, they're still Superman or Superwoman. They would have never made that mistake. Like, how, Jack Nicklaus said, I've never missed a putt on the 72nd hole. In his mind, he hasn't. He may have hit the perfect putt and it just hit a spike mark. But I can guarantee you when he went to practice, or, they focused on the little things, right? Like, I've never heard Nick Saban complain about the officiating, but he's complained about other things in the game. He may have been on the officials, but in the post game, when he reviews it, he never blames the officials. He turns it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When it goes to a place where he can control it, now he's going to go back to work on his team. So there's a very fine line there. And so I think when players are struggling, I think we take the burden as like, I failed this. I've struggled this. My swing's not right, whatever, versus, sometimes it is luck. And sometimes it's a really crappy shot. Sometimes it is. But a lot of times it's more along the lines of, that crappy shot just got a crappier result than it did in the past.
Yeah, and talking about those burdens that players, take home with them, one of the things that you taught me, and it's a habit that I've picked up, is daily journaling. Is that so important for guys?
I had a international pro call me earlier today, and I had an appointment. He calls and he's like, just verbal diarrhea for the first 3 minutes. And I said, stop. I said, you just walked into an emergency room and I have no idea what's wrong. I said, I want you to call me back in 10 minutes and I want you to write down the problems. Now, as a psychologist, I'm a clinician ultimately. That's what we do. Somebody comes in, they have a lot of angst and they write stuff down, and I write stuff down and like identify what's the most important, second, third, where can we win a little war? Can we get you to sleep better? Whatever. But what happens is our mind is just a scrambled mess. And so we don't know where to go. Okay. And journaling gives us that tool to write stuff down. If you've ever had a hard time sleeping at night because your mind is racing about all the things you have to do the next day, and if you got up in the middle of the night and you wrote it down, and you woke up the next morning, you're like, man, that was the stupidest little stuff I was worrying about. Like, take out the garbage. Yeah, I was going to take out the garbage. It took me a minute. But at 11:30 at night or 12 o'clock at night, you're like, I mean, I can't believe I haven't taken out the garbage. Because in the heat of the moment, so journaling allows that download to happen. And if people want to journal, easiest way to do it is just kind of what happened today, what did you learn from it, and then what are we going to do tomorrow? And I find that that is one of the best plans of objectives of having a game plan to do.
Man, that's some really good advice, and definitely something I've picked up from you. And as we kind of get into this Ryder Cup, you definitely have some clients you've worked with a long time. And so I got to ask you this question as we wrap. If John Rahm is playing Sam Burns on singles on Sunday, who are we cheering for?
I hope they all have a good time. I gotta tell you this. No, listen. USA, baby. And John would respect that.
Yeah, okay? I feel that.
I gotta tell you, I'm gonna out Sam and Billy. So this year there was a kind of a high profile college baseball finale with LSU baseball and Florida baseball, right? And Billy's obviously a very proud Gator, and Sam Burns is obviously a very proud LSU Tiger. And so we were talking, and the first game was a great game. And I sent Billy this message. It was Sam on the thread. I was like, hey, go Tigers, whatever. Billy doesn't say anything back to me. Not a word. The next day, it's like they just trounced.
Oh, my God. It was so bad.
Smart ass answer from Billy. So the next day, I send this text message. I'm flying back from Vegas. I send this text message out. Hey, guys. And I'm trying to play like Switzerland here. And I'm like, hey, guys, I hope everybody, it's going to be a great game. It's going to be a great matchup. I hope Paul Skeens gets to pitch, whatever. I just hope it's a great game. And Sam goes, to hell with that. I hope we trounce their asses.
Well, there you go.
And it did. And it happened. And Billy just kind of laughed about it. But you know what? It's really cool to have three guys I've worked with be four, actually, a little quietly, on the Ryder Cup. And I'm very honored by that. And I'll be rooting three on the American side and one on the other side. So how about that?
Yeah, and Brian Harmon being the other one, and then the other, we'll just keep to our mitts. Yep. But anyways, Doc, this is something I definitely want to do again. We didn't even touch so many other things that I want to talk about with you. And but this was a great start into what I feel like can be a fun little conversation as we continue on in this day of podcasting.
I got to say this, man. You're a stud with a mic in your hands. You are damn good professional golfer. But you have I knew when I saw you at Southern Hills walking around with a hot dog and broadcasting. And I turned to you in a practice round and said, you're pretty freaking good at this. And you are. And so keep it up. Keep telling the story. You are just another in the proud alums of LSU that are dominating the broadcasting rings.
Is Tommy Karam? That was the guy there.
But I mean, let's look at him. You, Ryan Clark, Booger McFarland, Marcus Spears, Ben McDonald. I mean, who else? I mean,
we got Peter Burns, Todd a big Walker, tiger.
Peter Burns. I mean,
yeah, there you go.
Golly, look at the domination coming from the purple and gold. Keep up the great work, brother.
Thanks, Doc. Thank you, Doc. And we will definitely be in touch and give you a shout soon. Get on the course, too. Yeah,
that's right. Let's do it.
All right, bro.
Really cool interview with Brett McCabe there, just breaking down the psyche of these guys. They head over to play in a Ryder Cup and just, you know, I think a lot of stuff in there that applies to players of any skill level that is very useful. I know for myself, there are a lot of pages I'm going to steal from Brett and maybe put those into my playbook. Well, that's all for us this week. Next week, we'll be back with, I guess, I you know what? I'm tired, Smiley. I don't know what our schedule looks like. I guess, theoretically, we'll have a Fortinet recap. We should have an interview with Wyndham Clark coming up. Can we tease that? Are we allowed to go live with that? Or
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
We have an interview with Wyndham coming up, asking about his comments made. I love it, the bulletin board material. And then, worth noting, we have a really, really cool collab coming up with Beef Johnston, where we're gonna do a little home and home to preview the Ryder Cup. And so look for that both in our feed in a couple of weeks and also in the Beef's Golf Club feed. Two really kind of fun podcasts coming together to preview both sides of it. So that's all we got for this week, unless you have any parting thoughts, Smiley.
Go Tigers.
Go Heels. Great day to be a Tar Heel. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.